morning. I'm Michael Blazier from LSU, and I'll be talking about the influences of energy cane residue management practices on soil carbon dynamics. This is a project that's part of a much larger effort under the Sustainable Bioproducts Initiative led by LSU. It's a NIFA-funded project, and we're indebted to the gentleman listed in this slide here for their help in the field and the laboratory, and greatly appreciate our funding from NIFA for this project. I want to start with building the case for the rationale behind this component of this project. This is derived from sugarcane being explored as a bioenergy bioproduct feedstock. Some of its favorable attributes is it has pretty high growth potential, 4 to 7 dry megagrams per hectare per year. It can achieve these yields with relatively low nutrient and ag chemical inputs. And what energy cane is, these are sugarcane varieties that have more high fiber production rather than the production of sugar producing characteristics. And because the juices for sugar production aren't the primary management objective, these can be grown on a larger range further north than what sugarcane can conventionally be grown in. Just a side-by-side comparison of energy cane and sugarcane. These were photos taken in South Louisiana right at harvesting time. Circled here is sugarcane, and you can see by that point in the season, it's actually sagging under the weight of the sugars in the stems. And adjacent to that is an energy cane variety. You can see there's not that sagging because fiber production, overall biomass production is the characteristic of interest here. Thinking about the production, the management of energy cane and sugar cane, one of the things where these types of varieties could differ in their management is in the practice of burning. In Louisiana and Florida, their burning is a conventional practice conducted with sugar cane production. It's done immediately prior to harvest to burn off all the leaves and extraneous material to make harvesting more efficient. And then after harvesting, it's typical for burning the leftover residue with the perception that this is going to increase the soil temperatures, cycle nutrients more readily, and reduce the potential for fungal infestation of that mulch that could spread into the crop. With energy cane production, though, where we're interested in harvesting more of the overall biomass, this may preclude the need to do any kind of burning. You're actually harvesting nearly all of the plant rather than just the stems and returning everything else to the site. And these differences in what we consider residue management practices could have impacts on soil carbon cycling. And when we think about this as a feedstock for biofuels, bioproducts, and thinking about the overall carbon life cycle of the producing these feedstocks, what impacts residue management has on carbon cycling is an important part of accounting for the carbon life cycle for producing these products. So with those thoughts in mind, the objective of this component of our study is to determine the effects of energy cane residue management practices on different parameters that are associated with carbon cycling, soil CO2 efflux, microbial biomass, carbon, and microbial activity of decomposition. This study was conducted in northeastern Louisiana at LSU's Macon Ridge Research Station. In the background there is a shot of is a picture of the site in March of last year, just kind of give you a sense of what it looks like. We have three treatments that are replicated three times in a completely randomized design. There's what we consider a control treatment of leaving the harvest residue on the soil surface. There's raking of the residue away from the soil surface, which would approximate a total removal of the residue from the site rather than returning it to the site. And then there's burning, which would be the conventional practice of burning after harvest. And this is a photo in the background of our burning treatments, and you can get an idea of how much residue is left on site from that photo. We're measuring soil CO2 efflux with the Licor 8100 gas analyzer. We're taking soil temperature and volumetric soil moisture in tandem with those measurements. We're also on a periodic basis adjacent to our sampling points for the soil gases. We're taking soil samples for microbial analyses of biomass carbon using the fumigation incubation procedure and microbial activity using the dehydrogenase activity assay. We measured the soil efflux adjacent to the rows and between the rows there, sort of represent the two types of conditions on the site. And in doing the analyses of the monthly soil efflux, there's actually a that sample point difference had an effect on the results. When that was pulled together at the plot level, there were actually no treatment differences, but in teasing this out, rows and furrows, we actually found the treatment differences. Looking at the row data, we found a significant treatment by date effect where we had three different sample points here where we found that the burning treatment had higher efflux rates than the control. And then and in this sample point, we found that the raking also had a higher efflux rate than the control treatment. And thought that maybe with more exposure of the soil surface, with the removal of that residue, that maybe that there was a soil temperature effect there that was contributing to this, but actually didn't find a significant effect on soil temperatures from these treatments. Assuming that the sugar cane is so grows so fast and so aggressively that there's enough shading there that we don't see that temperature effect. Now with the furrows, we found that the treatment effect was strong enough that it was a main effect rather than a treatment by date effect. So across all the sample points we've measured so far, that burning treatment has higher CO2 efflux rates than the control treatment. So to dive into a little bit of what could be contributing to these results, looking at the energy cane yields from last year, we're still waiting on the yield results for this year. We've actually found no difference in the cane yields so far from any of the treatments. So if we think of this as our primary source of autotrophic respiration that's contributing to those efflux rates, we're not seeing a treatment difference there. Looking at the microbial biomass, though, that trend follows really closely with what we're seeing with the soil efflux rates, where we have, and this is a main effect, so across all the sample points, sampling dates we've observed so far, there's a significantly higher microbial biomass carbon with the burning treatment versus the other two treatments. And thinking about microbial biomass as being our source of heterotrophic respiration, you can see that really it's the heterotrophic contribution to soil efflux that seems to be driving some of those treatment differences we're seeing in soil efflux. And I also think that that might be why we see a sharper effect of this in the furrow rather than in the rows, because in that inter-row area, there's going to be less plant roots that are contributing autotrophic respiration. So even though the microbial biomass carbon was higher overall with the burning treatment, we found that there's actually a treatment by date effect when we looked at the dehydrogenase activity, which is the activity of oxidation during decomposition of biomass. And the date where we found a treatment difference was at the latter end of the growing season, where we actually found that the control had higher microbial activity than the raking treatment, which was also greater than the control treatment, which was greater than the burning treatment, excuse me. So with increasing levels of or organic matter removal from that previous season, we saw by the end of the growing season, the microbial activity has declined. So this is pretty consistent with maybe exhausting some of the substrate contributed by the previous season residue by the end of that growing season. So for summary and conclusions here, what we found is that despite this energy cane having high plant biomass, the soil efflux rates differences between treatments were driven heavily by soil microbial biomass differences. We found that burning residue led to a higher microbial biomass and soil CO2 efflux rates. And by the latter portion of the growing season, microbial activity has been reduced by raking and burning treatments as those substrates from the previous season residues are exhausted. So physically removing harvesting residues had less effect on soil efflux and microbial biomass than burning wood. So actually we found that the microbial biomass, where we found these treatment differences, was similar with raking as it was to just leaving the residue in place. So the thing that's unknown here is we've only observed two seasons so far. We'll finish this season this year. But the longer-term effects of this is still undetermined. It would be interesting to speculate that maybe over time, if this were to be conducted annually, those treatment differences may continue to diverge there, such that, especially with leaving it in place, we're annually depositing more residue, we're increasing the carbon to nitrogen ratio. We may see further declines in the microbial biomass, where in the raking we're not replenishing residues to that system there. So there's potential for both of those treatments to continue to diverge away from the conventional practice of burning, which is returning organic matter to the soil. So it'll be interesting to follow that further through time and over a wider array of study sites to understand that better. Now that concludes my presentation. Welcome any questions you may have. Yes.
Can you talk about integrating the area under your soil efflux curves just to get this whole sort of treatment-based integrated response?
The question was integrating the area under there. It's interesting you mentioned that. My co-PI there is in the back of the room. We were just talking about that before I came to the stage there. And it's interesting because that inter-row area is a larger area per hectare, so it'll be interesting to kind of scale that up. We should see higher CO2 contribution because of that. There, once we adjust for that. Yes.
How deep are you evaluating this microbial biomass?
The question was how deeply are we sampling the microbial biomass? We went down to 30 centimeters in this study. That's correct. And although we did on the front end, and we'll do this again on the back end, we're going down to 1 meter and subdividing that by horizon. That's another component of the project that I didn't address right here.
Yeah, my question is because in the deep host system, probably you contribute much more this microbial biomass than the trash left on the soil.
That's right. Well, actually, I think deeper down the horizon, those differences may, over time you probably could see that more there. I don't know within a two-season study yet we'd be able to find those differences at the deeper horizon, but it's interesting to explore that. Yeah. Yes?
Do you think it may be different if you test that in collaboration?
The question is, do you think it'd be different to disc it in? I think, especially, that would, our previous presentation, and I would expect the same thing here, that disking it in, you would see, higher microbial biomass and activity there. It's the same reason he presented on our increased surface area. I don't know that we'd see it quite as dramatically as in like corn, because this is a really long lignin chain here, so it's still harder to break down there. I think that's why the burning treatment is such higher microbial biomass. It's done a better job, but and I guess that's what most approximates disking in this study here. By getting the ash, getting it in ash, it's leaching down in the soil more readily than just leaving it on the surface.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you.